Good morning. It's great to have such a great crowd here, but it does make it a little slow coming to the front, the narrow aisle. I wanted to go back over a couple of things from yesterday. One thing was pointed out to me that was an oversight on my part. On page 10 of your handout, where we have the total duration of the book of Genesis, and we had a little discussion yesterday about that. I had that the ending point of Genesis being the death of Jacob, and it was pointed out to me, and I guess I just overlooked the last verse of Genesis. If you want to turn there, Genesis chapter 50 and verse 26. So Joseph died being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. And I'm not sure how I overlooked that, maybe because I found that in Exodus it also told about Joseph dying, so I wasn't looking for it there in Exodus 1 and 6, where it says, "And Joseph died, all his brothers, and all that generation." So you might want to make a note of Genesis 50 and 26. And so to try to establish what that number is instead of 2,255 for the total duration of the book of Genesis, the other reference I would give you is Genesis 41 and 46. And if you want to turn there real quickly, we can. In Genesis 41 and 46, says, "Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt." Now, the context here was this was after Joseph had interpreted the Pharaoh's dream, which the interpretation of that was that there would be 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. So at this point in time, Joseph was 30 years old. And immediately after that began the 7 years of plenty. So after the end of 7 years of plenty, he would have been 37 years old. And then we get into the famine. Now, what we don't know for sure, so we'll have to use our little squiggly line, which means approximately equal to, is when during that 7 years of famine exactly did Jacob and Joseph's brothers come to Egypt. But sometime during that 7 years of famine, they came down. So we'll say Joseph was approximately 40, probably a little less, I would guess, because it was probably pretty early in the famine that they came down to Egypt. But for sake of a round number, we'll say that Joseph was around 40 when they came down to the land of Egypt. So then if Joseph was 110 when he died, and that's the end point of Genesis instead of his father, Jacob's death, then we would have to add 70, but we don't want to double count the 17 years that we added that Jacob lived in Egypt before his death. So we take that back out, and so we need to add somewhere around 53 years to that number there. Yes, Doug?
In Genesis 45:11, it tells us there's 5 years of the famine left when Joseph sent for his family.
Okay, thank you very much. I did not find that when I was Genesis 45:11. It says that there were 5 years left of the famine when Joseph's brothers came down. So that allows us to nail it down then to... yeah. But... That allows us to say that Joseph would have been 39 years old at that point in time. So then that would make – here, I got to do math up here again. So that makes – thank you. 23, 26? Okay.
Okay, can I
interrupt I'll double check that, but we'll take that for now.
Can I interrupt you for just a second? I just had someone ask me if there were some extra outlines, and I know that Dennis is we copied kind of partial outlines. So if you need them, if you raise your hand, Dennis will get you the first 26 pages. We only made six, so hopefully there's not too many. There's a gentleman in the back that needed one.
Yeah, I think it's... yeah, the number you gave would be
out.
If you added 71 to 2255, but we need to take out... the 17 years that I already had added to that for Jacob. So we need to add 54 to 2255, which gives us 2309 as the number. So. Does that make sense? Yes, 2309 for the duration of Genesis. Okay. Okay, we... That 2255, okay, that when Jacob went to Egypt, he was 130 years old, okay? And then it was another 17 years after that when he died. And that was what I had as the ending point of Genesis, okay? So what we should have is Joseph's death at the ending point of Jesus. So if we take from when they came to Egypt... Maybe I should write this on the board. We'll make this be came to Egypt, and that's Joseph's family, okay? At this point, Jacob was 130. And Joseph was 39, okay, at that point in time. This is Jacob's death. At the age of 147, okay, so we have 17 years here, okay. Here's Joseph's death. And Joseph was 110, okay? So this right here, this distance is 71, okay? From Joseph was 39 here, he died at 110, so that's 71 years. This is what I did have as the ending point for Genesis, which was the 2255. We're saying that it really should have been at Joseph's death. So we take that 2255 and we have to add this much to it, which is 71 minus 17. It's 54. Does that clear it up a little bit? Or not? Is everyone okay with that? Okay. All right. And I appreciate those who pointed out that oversight, and thank you, Doug, for finding that verse that I didn't find when I was trying to see if we could come up with a number, given that it was the death of Joseph. Okay. Do you feel like you're in math class in school? Always like math, so. It's good for me. All right. So... And if you find, you know, any other omissions or errors or anything, please feel free to point them out to me, because it's easy to make errors in this kind of study. Okay, so last time, yesterday, we had started to talk about this 430-year sojourn, and I thought maybe I need to step back a little bit, and given the diversity of the audience that we have here, and make sure everyone is kind of on the same page of what we're talking about here. We've talked about how Joseph's family came down to Egypt because of the famine. And we know that, as the early part of Exodus tells us, that at first things went really well for them. They multiplied exceedingly. But then a Pharaoh arose who was afraid of them and put them in bondage. And they served Pharaoh for many years until God delivered them with Moses leading them. So when we talk about this bondage and this sojourn, we're talking about a period of time when we read the verses there, the sojourn of the children of Israel in Egypt, or a time when they would dwell in a foreign land and be in bondage for 430 years, as given in Exodus 12, 40 and 41. And let's just go back through these verses here. I'm on page 14. I'm sorry. Page 14. The 430-year sojourn. In Exodus 12, 40 and 41, and the context of this is when they are leaving Egypt, okay? They've had the 10 plagues. They finally are exiting Egypt. And it tells us in Exodus 12, 40 and 41, "Now the sojourn of the children of Israel who lived in Egypt was 430 years. And it came to pass at the end of the 430 years, on that very same day, it came to pass that all the armies of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt." And then in Galatians 3, and I'd like for you to turn there today, because I think I maybe need to do a little better job of clarifying the context of that verse there, Galatians 3 and 17. And I think we need to go back a little bit earlier in the chapter than I did yesterday, just to be clear about this promise here. So let's go back to verse 5. "Therefore, he who supplies the Spirit to you and works miracles among you, does he do it by the works of the law or by the hearing of faith? Just as Abraham believed God and it was counted to him for righteousness, therefore, know that only those who are of faith are sons of Abraham. And the Scripture, foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, preached the gospel to Abraham beforehand, saying, 'In you all the nations shall be blessed.' So then those who are of faith are blessed with believing Abraham." So what was preached to Abraham way back there in Genesis? The gospel, exactly. And how was the gospel preached to Abraham? What was he told that we're told here was the gospel? Exactly. In him, all nations of the earth would be blessed. And, of course, we know that that was a reference to Jesus. Jesus, a descendant of Abraham. Through him, not only the Jews, but all of us would be blessed. So the gospel, the good news, the story of Christ was preached way back to Abraham, okay? And so that's what we're referring to here, is when this promise, this gospel, was preached to Abraham. So then when we come up here to verse 17, Paul is making the point that was preached to Abraham before or after the law was given? Before, exactly. How far before the law was given? 430 years before. And that's the point that Paul is making here. He says in verse 17, "And this I say, that the law, which was 430 years later, 430 years after the gospel was first preached to Abraham, that it doesn't annul that gospel that was first preached to Abraham." Okay? And then he goes on to tell why that law was given. It wasn't given to nullify the promise that was given to Abraham. That was still in effect. It was given, it tells us, as our schoolmaster, to bring us to the gospel, to bring us to Christ. So I just wanted to make that clear that to me it's clear from this passage in Galatians that Paul's understanding of the beginning point of that 430 years was when the promise was given to Abraham. And I was just thinking about that last night, because the promise, was it just given to Abraham, that promise that in your seed all nations of the earth shall be blessed? No, it was repeated. It was repeated later to Abraham when he was 90. Well, he was told that his... he was told that his seed would multiply and be a great nation when he was 99. But when he was offering Isaac, this promise was repeated to him. And it was also repeated to Isaac, and it was repeated to Jacob. But I believe from the context here in Galatians that Paul is putting the beginning point of that 430 years when the promise was given to Abraham. So I'm kind of jumping ahead there a little bit, but I did want to make that point. So we have these two references to this 430 years. In Exodus, it says on that very same day, 430 years later, was when they were coming out of Egypt. We have Paul's references to it. But then we have these two references to 400 years of bondage in Genesis 15 and 13. God, again, talking to Abram here, "Know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, and will serve them, and they will afflict them 400 years. And then in Acts chapter 7, this is Stephen speaking here, "But God spoke in this way, that his descendants would dwell in a foreign land, and that they would bring them into bondage and oppress them 400 years. Now, before I comment too much on those, I'd like to go ahead and go through and so that we're aware of the problem that exists here in interpreting the 400 years of bondage as being the time that they were in bondage in Egypt. Okay? So if we look at some time spans here, from when Abraham first received the promise, he was 75 years old when he first received that promises in Genesis chapter 12. In Genesis 21 and 5, he was 100 years old when Isaac was born. Isaac was 60 when Jacob and Esau were born. And Jacob was 130 years old when he came to Egypt. We've talked about that before. So you add all that up, and we have 215 years from when Abram was 75 and first received the promise until Jacob and his family first come to Egypt. Okay? So we have 215 years there. Now, the other thing I wanted to look at, and if we look in Exodus chapter 6, starting in verse 16 there, we'll pick out at least a couple, just so you'll see where I got these numbers from. So this is the sons of Levi, okay, Gershon, Kohath, Merari. The years of the life of Levi were 137, and then the years of the life of Kohath were 133, verse 18. Amram, 137. And then we know that Moses was 80, okay? And now we're not told here how old each of these men was when the next generation was born. But I did want to show the lifespans here, because this is the generations from from Levi until Moses, which was when they were coming out of Egypt, okay? And we've only got four generations here. Okay, and we can see their lifespans here. And we can see that the other verse I wanted to point out was in Genesis 46:11, that Kohath, who was the son of Levi, was already born when the 70 came to Egypt. He was named with the 70 there in Genesis 46:11. The sons of Levi were Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, okay? So what does that tell us then about a 400-year time span for the bondage in Egypt? If we've only got four generations here, I mean, if we added up their total lifespans, then we could, well, you can't if you say that Kohath was already born, because if he was a, if he was an infant, okay, we could have had 133, and I guess he could have had Amram when he was 133 right before he died. And then we have 137, but it doesn't make sense. So we have a problem here in being able to have 400 years of bondage with just these three generations there, Kohath, Amram, and then to Moses. Okay, so that's an issue that we have. And then just some other information on this, just... if we go over to page 15, how many people were in that group of Jacob's family that came to Egypt? 70, okay. Now we're told that they had possessions there, they grew and multiplied exceedingly. Exodus 1 and 7, the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly, multiplied and grew exceedingly mightily, and the land was filled with them. How many were there by the time they came out of Egypt? Well, Numbers 1, 45 and 46, so all who were numbered of the children of Israel by their fathers' houses from 20 years old and above, all who were able to go to war in Israel, all who were numbered were 603,550. It's thought that the total, and that was men from 20 years old and above who were able to go to war. There was over 600,000. So it's thought the total population was probably 2 to 3 million. So I was thinking about that and these time spans that we're talking about here. If it was 215 years already, as we've calculated, from when Abram received the promise until the 70 went to Egypt, okay? So we start out with 70. If there's 215 years and the 430 years is from when the promise was given to Abraham, so how much time do we have that they were actually in Egypt? 215 years, okay? So I was like, yeah, that seems like a pretty fast population growth there. And in fact, to grow from 70 to 2.3 million, the population would have to double 15 times. So in 215 years, that would mean it would have to double every 14.3 years. If it was 430 years, it would have to double every 28.6 years. And so I thought, well, I don't really know what that means. So I looked up, you know, population growth for the United States, and the fastest rate that we've had in the United States over the last century has been about 2% per year, which would be doubling every 35 years. So either of those growth rates is faster than anything we've experienced in the United States over the last century. Now, what is that saying? It's saying they really grew fast. And the Bible's indicates, I believe, that God was blessing them in this. Now, another thing to consider is that group of 70 that first came there, I highly doubt that they just intermarried among themselves. I'm sure that the men for sure took wives of the area they were in through the first several generations, I'm sure. So I'm sure there were a lot of new people being brought into that 70 to aid in this growth. So the problem we're presented with here is what is that 430 years? And I believe that based on Paul's understanding of it, that we date that from when Abram first received the promise. Now, the problems with that, and we can flip over to page 16. I've kind of spelled out two explanations here for this 430-year sojourn. And this 430-year sojourn is important. If you remember when I drew out here on the board, you know, that unbroken chain of chronology from creation to Christ, and that's one of the links in the chain there is this 430 years. And so it's kind of important for us to try to establish the beginning. The end point is clear. What the end point of it is, it's the beginning point that's a little bit unclear. And I think the two choices we're presented with is either the beginning point was when the promise was first given to Abram, which I believe was Paul's understanding of it, clearly from Galatians chapter 3 there, or that it was actually the beginning point of when they came to Egypt. But there's a 215-year difference there. So let's look at these two explanations on page 16 of your handout. So theory one is that it was dated from the time Abram first received the promise. This would seem to be Paul's understanding based upon his dating of the 430 years from the receipt of the promise till the law was given. And note that the Septuagint, that's the Greek translation of the Old Testament, that it actually has edited that passage in Exodus 12, 40, and 41 as a sojourn in Egypt and Canaan. So, and just to clarify this a little bit here, a sojourn is, what does that mean to you? Not a permanent residence. You're in a strange land. What had happened at that point when Abram was 75 years old and he was given the promise? What else was he told at that point in time? To leave his home and go to a land that I will show you. Go to a strange land, not your home, and that would become the home of your descendants. Okay, it wasn't given to him. It would become the home of his descendants. So he left on a journey, on a sojourn, if you will, his home at that point in time. Okay, so I think it makes sense with that. And it makes sense with the generations from Levi to Aaron and Moses. We saw there, unless there's generations in there that were not given, you know, that the Bible left out, it just is not possible that we went from Levi to Kohath to Amram to Moses and Aaron in that span of time. The problems with this interpretation is the population growth seems impossible, although with God all things are possible, and I think with bringing in wives and maybe husbands too in those early generations, from which I think they would have had to have. I can't imagine that they were just marrying their cousins early on there especially. So that certainly would have aided. Jacob had sons by multiple women, two wives and two handmaidens, and it was a common practice in that time. So I don't have any reason to believe that wouldn't have continued at least through the first few generations there in Egypt. So that certainly would have made it plausible that you could have had this population explosion in that period of time. Another problem, though, is that it appears to be at odds with the prophecy of 400 years of bondage given to, and this is a bigger problem to me. I believe that the population growth could have happened if that's what God wanted to happen. I think we can see how that could have happened during that 215 years. Bigger problem I have is the apparent contradiction with those two verses, Abram being told that his descendants would be, it sounds like it's saying they would be in bondage for 400 years. We'll go back and look at that here in a second. And then Stephen reiterating that in Acts chapter 7. Now, the second theory is that the 430 years is the actual length of time from when Jacob came to Egypt until the Exodus. That does corroborate better with the prophecy of 400 years bondage, if that's really saying 400 years of bondage. The population growth makes more sense. Again, I don't have a big issue with that either way. The problem is we have to say then that there's generations missing from the lineage of Levi. And it doesn't seem to agree with what Paul said there in Galatians 30. It's very clear to me that he dated the 430 years from when Abram received the promise. Now, I will say that the traditional, if you will, understanding of this, if you look at Bible chronologies, is that the 430 years begins with the promise given to Abram. Okay, that seems to be the generally accepted. You will see some chronologies out there. You'll see chronologies that are all over the map. Everybody and their brother has got a chronology out there, and you know, it's you know, there's some that are definitely much more accepted than others, and it generally seems to be accepted that it began with the promise. Now, if we go to these verses here about the 400-year bondage, we'll just talk about that a little bit, and then I'll just leave it with you. I will note that in Genesis 15:13, it says, "Know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, and will serve them, and they will afflict them 400 years." I kind of wish Ellie was here with his Hebrew Bible to see how that read. We have, you know, what, three different things there. They'll be strangers in a land that is not theirs, and they will serve and afflict them 400 years. Now, it's almost even more so when Stephen says that God spoke in this way, Acts 7:6, that his descendants would dwell in a foreign land, and that they would bring them into bondage and oppress them 400 years. On the surface, it looks like the bondage and oppression was the 400 years, but I wonder if, in the translation, if maybe his descendants would dwell in a foreign land, and they would eventually bring them into bondage and oppress them, and this would be over a period of 400 years, if maybe that's really what it's saying there. That's all I'm going to say on this. We spent a lot of time on this. But I'll open it up for just a couple of minutes for any questions, comments. Tom.
I appreciate your thoughts here. Here's another possibility. In the very next chapter, we have the Egyptian handmaiden.
Yeah.
And
thank
she
you for
bears
that out.
A part Egyptian boy who persecutes Isaac, who oppresses Isaac.
Thank you for bringing that out. Did everyone catch that? The reference there is,
and also Galatians 4.
Okay, Galatians 4.
Galatians 4.
And he's talking about Ishmael, right?
Yes.
He's talking about the son Ishmael that was born of the Egyptian maidservant, okay? Mm-hmm. And how it's told that he would oppress his brother.
Starting in 21.
Yeah.
Galatians 4:21.
Yeah, I'm trying to get there. Yeah, you want to go ahead and read that, Tom?
Okay.
So I'm still turning to it.
"Tell me, ye that desire to be under the law, do you not hear the law? For it is written that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondmaid, the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born after the flesh. He of the free woman was by promise. Which things are an allegory, for these are the two covenants, the one from the Mount Sinai, which genders to bondage, which is Agar. For this Agar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, and answers to Jerusalem, which now is, and is in bondage with her children. But Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the mother of us all. For it is written, Rejoice, thou barren that bearest not. Break forth and cry, thou that travailest not. For the desolate has many more children than she which has a husband. Now we, brethren, as Isaac was, are the children of promise. But as then he that was born after the flesh persecuted him that was born after the Spirit, even so it is now. Nevertheless, what does the Scripture say? Cast out the bondwoman and her son, for the son of the bondwoman shall not be heir with the son of the free woman. So then, brethren, we are not children of the bondwoman, but of the free."
Okay, thank you, Tom. Yeah, that's a good point. I had not considered it. When you said Egypt, I thought you were going to talk about when Abram went down into Egypt shortly after the point we're talking about. That's a good point there, as a beginning point of that being in bondage is actually the birth of Ishmael. So, okay, is there any other quick? Yeah,
there was something that came to my attention.
before Abram, most of the men had children at about age 30. And if that happened with most of the descendants of Israel, then that would give about 7 generations for many of the families.
Mm-hmm.
And if they had about 10 or 12 children for each generation, which could have happened after they went to Egypt, then that would bring it closer to the number, especially if they followed their father's example and had multiple wives.
Right. Yeah, thank you. I do think that that population growth in 250 years is definitely possible. Yeah, thank you. And I don't have an issue with that. So, okay, well, let's move on. Yeah, Gordon.
In Hebrews 11, it talks about how Abraham and those that received the promise never, you know, didn't experience the promise is fulfilled. But it says, let's see, I had it here a second ago. 11:13 is kind of where it is. Therefore, all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. So that's kind of solidifying the sojourn part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And for they say they such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. So, to me, that kind of solidifies that. And then if we also think of the fact that being in bondage is equivalent to sin, they hadn't received the law till then,
mm-hmm.
then even when he received the promise, he was still in that condition.
Okay. All right. I think clearly the sojourn part of it, you know, from when Abram was told to leave his home, they were pilgrims. They did not have a home, him and his descendants, until they came out of Egypt and were given the Canaan land. So I think to me that's very clear. The biggest hang-up I had, and I really appreciate Tom bringing that out, was those two passages talking about 400 years of bondage. And I was like, it just... Yeah, I wanted to, and I really appreciate you bringing that out there. So I think that really helps with that. Okay, so let's go on to the next section here, which is the chronology of the Exodus and the conquest of Canaan. And you'll see a table there on pages 18 and 19. And there's a lot of detail here, and... when we study Exodus, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, what are we usually studying about there? What are we usually focused on? The law, exactly. We have all we have the Ten Commandments, but then we have, in addition to that, all the instructions for the building of the tabernacle and all the articles that went into the tabernacle, all the laws concerning their relations with one another, the sacrifices, the instructions for the priests and so forth. And that's what we're focused on. And we don't typically focus on the chronology of events there, which I find kind of interesting here for this period of time. I think, as I said already, I find it interesting how we in the Bible we'll have a book that covers Genesis, that covers 2,300 years, and then we have a book that covers just a few days. And I just find that very interesting. So we'll go through that. We won't belabor this, but we'll kind of step down through the events here from when they came out of Egypt until they conquer the Canaan land. So in Exodus 12 and 2, let's just turn there real quick. We won't... turn to all of these passages here. You have them here to reference, but I want to turn to this one. Starting in verse 1, "Now the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, 'This month shall be your beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you.'" Okay, so this is when the Jewish calendar began. This is the first month of the first year there in Exodus 12 and 2. And then we go down later in that chapter, Exodus 12, 17 through 19. "So you shall observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread, for on this same day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. For you shall observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting ordinance. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening. For 7 days no leaven shall be found in your houses, since whoever eats what is leavened, that same person shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he's a stranger or a native of the land." So we find out here that the Lord delivered them out of Egypt on the 14th day of that first month, instituted the Passover. And then in Exodus 16 and 1, we find that they arrive in the wilderness of Sin on the 15th day of the second month after leaving Egypt. Okay, so it took them 1 month and 1 day, okay, to arrive at this point. And then God starts providing manna for them at that point. Then in Exodus 19, 1 and 2 is when they arrive at Mount Sinai. So how long did it take them to get from Egypt to Mount Sinai? Month and a half, roughly, from the 14th day of the first month to the first day of the third month. So about 6 weeks they were traveling from Egypt until they got to Mount Sinai, okay? So, excuse me, in Exodus 19, God spoke to the people on the third or possibly fourth day of the third month. And I thought it was interesting that some have observed that this was very near, if not right on the 50th day after they left Egypt, which could correspond to the day of Pentecost. And I thought that was interesting. That was the day God first spoke to them there on Mount Sinai. I could not find any place in the Bible where it makes that comparison. Does anyone have any? Yeah, Tom. Do we have? Yeah. I'm just curious if anyone else had heard of that connection. And
Hebrews 12 says, "We have not come to Mount Sinai, we've come to Mount Zion."
Okay.
And Mount Zion is in prophecy, Isaiah 2. The mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of all the mountains. The
right.
Law shall go out from Jerusalem. So there is a connection there with the law and Jerusalem, Mount Sinai, the Pentecost.
Well, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Very true. We received the apostles on the day of Pentecost. That was when the church started. Just as they started to receive the law. Okay, thank you. Yes? Hebrews chapter 12.
The latter half of the chapter.
Right.
And Isaiah 2, the prophecy there.
The law will come out of Zion. Okay, thank you. Yes?
I don't necessarily have a specific verse, but to me, I'm willing to accept this possibility just because I don't. It's close enough to be more than just a coincidence. And then you also have, like, Abraham, when he sacrificed Isaac, he was told to go to a specific place, the mountains of Moriah, and that's Jerusalem. So you've got a lot of things in the Old Testament that are so close to things of Christ and his sacrifice and the day of
right.
Pentecost that it seems like the Lord is setting himself up. Or setting things up to point to the Christian church.
Right. Thank you. Yeah, I can remember someone here said that God doesn't do anything. Maybe it was Ellie that said, you know, God doesn't do anything by accident. You know, these numbers and these patterns are there specifically for a reason. Yeah, Tom.
Another one, Paul talks a lot about how the letter kills, but the spirit gives life. And when the law was given at Mount Sinai, 3,000 people died in a few days later. But they died because of the idolatry. They broke the law as soon as they got it. Whereas on the day of Pentecost, 3,000 people live. So the Spirit gives life, and the letter kills.
Thank you. All right. Okay, let's move on down here. Okay, so God spoke to them on the third or fourth day of the third month. And then from chapters 20 through 39, they're camped here at Mount Sinai. And we have in these chapters here this giving of the law to them. And much of the of what they received in that time was instructions, as I said before, about building the tabernacle, building all the stuff that go, all the articles that go in the tabernacle, the garments and so forth for the priests, all the instructions for what they were to do. And we see that there was a time span of 10 months there, the rest of that year. Okay, so what do you suppose they were doing during that time? Right, they were making all these things per the instructions that God had given them, because we see on the first day of the first month of the second year that now they're starting to perform these things that God had told them to. So it all makes sense. They were given these commands on how to do these things, but they needed these months to be able to actually build these things, make these things, and be ready to where in that second year after they came out, they can start actually practicing these things that God had put had commanded them to do. So in Exodus 40, verses 2 and 17, we see that the tabernacle was set up on the first day of the first month of the second year. And from Numbers 9 and 15, we learn that beginning from that day, the cloud appeared over the tabernacle by day and the fire by night, beginning on that first day of the first month of the second year, starting from when their calendar started back there in Exodus chapter 12. Leviticus chapters 8 and 9, we see that Aaron, his sons, their garments, tabernacle, all these things are consecrated per the instructions that were given back in Exodus 29. As I said before, they didn't happen there in Exodus 29. They were just told how to do that. It was up here in Leviticus where it actually happens. The actual ceremony lasted 8 days, one day of offerings and anointing, followed by 7 days where Aaron and his sons are isolated inside the tabernacle, took place in Leviticus chapters 8 and 9. After the tabernacle was raised, but before the observance of the second Passover. So the Passover was the 14th day of the first month. It was after the tabernacle was raised on the first day of the first month. So during that time span, they had this 8 days of consecrating Aaron, his sons, and all these items. And I just made this note here. It's interesting to me is that the duration, if you will, of Leviticus, this is the only duration I can find there, is this 8 days in chapters 8 and 9 there. Other than that, Leviticus really doesn't have any duration. It's instructions mostly to the priest about the things that they were supposed to do. Okay, Numbers chapter... Thank you. Numbers chapter 7, we have again the consecration of the tabernacle and priests spoken of now for the third time. And here we learn that beginning on the day after this took place, which would be the second day of the first month of the second year, each of the tribes brings its offering for the Levites. So, and note that, thank you. Needed it. I'll try not to spill it. Okay. So also during that time from the first day of the first month to the 14th day of the first month, the Passover, we have these offerings being brought one day for each tribe, which would take 12 days during that span. So I found this all interesting when you, we like I say, when we study this, we're normally focused on the laws themselves and don't really stop and think about the sequence of events here. They came to Mount Sinai. They were given the law, all these instructions. Then they had some time, several months, to make these things. And then beginning on that first day of that second year was when they start putting this into practice. And a lot was going on during those first 14 days of that second year, bringing all these offerings, consecrating the priests, after getting the tabernacle set up. So I found that really, really interesting there. And then chapter 8, ceremonial cleansing of the Levites. And I just have a note there that that must have taken place on the 13th or 14th day of the first month of the second year, right before the Passover, because of the events that had to take place leading up to that. And then chapter 9, we have finally the second Passover observed on the 14th day of the first month of the second year at twilight. Now note that Numbers 1 and 1 talks about a census that was done on the first day of the second month of the second year. So the first part of Numbers is actually takes place after the events later in Numbers there. So I thought that was interesting also. Numbers 10 and 11, on the 20th day of the second month of the second year, the cloud is taken up. And from the tabernacle, the children of Israel leave Mount Sinai to continue their journey to Canaan. So they were at Mount Sinai a total of 10 days short of one full year. And then, so we have a lot of detail there around when they were at Mount Sinai. And then some of the detail is lost. We have a lot of events going on there. But we don't really have a reference point until Numbers chapter 20 and verse 1. And it's a little bit hard to say when that was, but I'm thinking it's probably more towards the end. And we only got 5 minutes left, so I better open it up for any questions here at the end. And we'll finish up this section tomorrow.
Dennis, I really hate to take you back to Abraham in the 430 years, but if we in looking at Genesis chapter 16, verses 11 through 16, it tells us there that essentially 11 years after Abraham received the promise, that Ishmael was born. He was 75 when he received the covenant. Mm-hmm. He was 86 then when Ishmael was born. 14 years later, Abraham and Sarah had Isaac because he was 100. Takes you to 25. And then in Genesis 21 and verse 8, it says when Isaac was weaned, Hagar was sent away. And I don't remember whether it was you or someone else, but wasn't the figure typically when a child was weaned somewhere around five?
Someone
this week mentioned it, five. I think it was five or six.
Okay.
And so then you have exactly 30 years.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. So the difference between the 430 from when the promise to when they came out and the 400 years of bondage, is that...
Right. So if you combine your starting point with Tom Woody's inclusion of Ishmael in this, uh-huh. you end up, give or take a year maybe, within that 430 years.
Right. Okay. So if you take when Isaac was weaned as that being possibly the beginning point of that bondage, you know, that Isaac versus Ishmael bondage.
It specifically says that Hagar was sent away that day because that's when Ishmael really went after Isaac.
Okay, very good. Did everyone catch that? Keith went through and noted that Abram received the promise when he was 75. He would have been 105 when...
100 years old.
Well, yeah, I'm skipping it. I'm skipping beyond that, right.
Sorry.
He would have been 105 when Hagar was sent away, okay? And combining that with Tom's point about them being in bondage to Ishmael, okay, then at that point where him and his mother were sent away, we have that 30-year difference between the 430 and the 400 years of bondage. You could mark that easily as the beginning point of that bondage, I think. Very good. Thank you. I really appreciate you guys bringing out these points. Yeah, back here. We have a question back there.
It's interesting to notice that there's friction that happened between Ishmael and Isaac, and is has been going on ever since.
Yeah.
It still is, and looks like it's never going to quit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the prophecy was definitely fulfilled there. Thank you. Okay. 1 minute. Yeah, Tom... Every time I say Tom turns around.
It is interesting, like you're saying, how Genesis is about so much time, and then now we get down to narrow few days, few weeks, and things like that. The thought I get from that is that whenever we look at what man does, it's really kind of depressing. It's not much excitement, but here we're seeing a lot of what God's doing, and that's another reason for it. There's so many years that went by in Genesis, we don't know what happened. It just covers a long period of time, but we do get to read about the important things, the things that God was doing with man, and
right.
I like that.
Right. Yeah, thank you. And like I mentioned yesterday, you know, we kind of like to know more about what went on in that 1,656 years before the flood, but you know, the Bible tells us that the land, the earth was full of violence. You know, every thought, every intent of man's heart was only violence and wickedness. So why would we want to know about a world that was like that? So thank you very much. Time's up.